Well, hi there. Welcome back to Beyond the Classroom with Mike Harris. I'm Mike Harris, and I have some special folks here to meet with you today, and we're going to talk about things you're going to wonder. This is actually a missionary couple that I know through my daughter, Stephanie, and you're going to say, what does that have to do with homeschooling? Well, I will tell you what it has to do with homeschooling. What it has to do is that when you are homeschooling, books are not it. You're really trying to get beyond your immediate area. You have to understand the world. And to do that, you have to have relationships with people outside your family. Regular school, you have a pile of people that get together and they just look at each other. Real life, that's not how it goes. We know people all over the planet, and here are two folks for you. So I'm going to have you introduce yourself. And so, James, Karina, what are your names and what do you do?
Yeah, hi, I'm Karina Beach.
I'm James.
Yes, and we work in Costa Rica. As you said, we're missionaries, full-time missionaries in Costa Rica in the area of Talamanca. We minister to the Bribri indigenous folks back down there in Costa Rica.
Now, when you came to me, to my mind, one of the things that stood out was our initial meeting. You were talking about the Bribri. And they have a special need there. They're not just an indigenous tribe. Something's going on with them. What's going on with them that you're really trying to do?
Well, what we've discovered is that this kind, generous, industrious people that have a history of being colonized and pushed back up into the mountains away from society and still live in very primitive settings, deal with a lot of poverty, but there is a shroud of this customary generational incest that's happening, that's damaging the children beyond measure, and that's causing very early teenage pregnancy, suicidal behavior in the young kids, and it's we've discovered this custom where especially the females, but some of the males are kind of passed around as property amongst the family, and they have nowhere to go. And so the nest is first and foremost a site that we've managed to carve out of the jungle and build houses, and as primarily as a safe shelter. But once we get the kids in there, then there's the start of the healing process, the counseling, and reforming their life around a new identity and what their purpose is.
Yeah, and preparing them also for life. You know, like when you were talking about, it's not just about the formal education, but how are they going to go back into society after a trauma like this?
So you've been there for the last good part of the year. This has been a multi-year process to get to there. I know that, where was it? In October, November, you moved down to Costa Rica. James was a full-time nurse at San Francisco at UCSF. And Karina, I don't know what you were doing.
Well, before I went into Costa Rica, I was actually also working in missions, but I was working in San Francisco in the Tenderloin doing street missions with homelessness and especially youth and females that were on the streets.
Okay. And so since you've been there, I've been looking at your videos and such. What's accomplished? I know you're in the building phase of building the nest as a physical plant. How's that going along? What have you got done so far?
Well, we've built the main common house, which we call the Casona. It's been built by the Bribri in a Bribri style with a thatched roof with wood that we've milled right on site. And it's exciting to see it happen. We've built the main house, which will serve as like the dining hall, classroom, everything building along with a kitchen. We built four facilities of bathrooms with showers. And now we're in the process of building the individual houses, which will be the home for these children. Each house will occupy four children and a parent figure, and they'll become a family unit. And then through that family unit, they'll work through our curriculum that we're developing. So it's been exciting. We're also built a farm there. We've planted 250 coffee plants. We have hundreds of cacao plants, corn,
coffee,
lemon,
banana,
mango, avocado. We're building it so it's a self-sustaining farming community. And so that is in place. The farming is in place, waiting for the crops, and we are still in the process of building the little houses for the kids. And that's where we are physically.
Yeah, and as and the work of the NES has been going on for 5 years, we do outreach with the children. So we work with the different communities. There are about five different villages, you know, that where we have group of families with a church and a school. So for the last 5 years, we have been able to work with them, have a relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
and they have entrusted us their children. So we do a lot of programs that it comes with, like, you know, we do craftings, we do dance, we do music, we do, you know, teachings.
Mm-hmm.
We also talk a lot about safety and what it means to be safe and who is a safe person. We do that, a lot of that work with the little children, so they can learn from the small age to advocate for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you guys know, and you guys may not know, have worked in schools where we ran a home for sex trafficked girls here in the Placerville area. And that really stood out to me as a huge need. When you described the incest and just the lifestyle that these kids are brought up in, and it's natural for them to do that. Can you talk about that a little bit of, you know, what's going on there that it just seems normal to them? And then what does that do to the kids?
So I can tell you what it does. I could talk a little bit about what does that kind of behavior does to a child. And I can only speak about my own story. So when you're in a family where there is not a balance, where there's no good routines, where there's a lot of alcohol and the behavior that involves, like, not having, you know, like, values. And for me personally, and you know this, Mike,
mm-hmm.
I'm a Christian. So it's like what it's like to grow up without Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot of moral issues. And then what happens is the adults, in this case, the experiences are, for example, we know a story of a child who, when she came to us, she was 14 years old. And she told me with her own words saying, "Hey, you know, ever since I'm 8, I've been fighting my uncle. And sometimes I have to run to the kitchen and grab a knife and just fight, you know,
mm-hmm.
fight. And, you know, and then I know because I see her face and we have more deep conversations about this. She usually uses the bottle, you know, so
mm-hmm.
she tries to defend herself. We have another story of another gal who she used to tell me, I used to run away from the house because I couldn't take it anymore. And I go to another house, and in this new house, then my sister's husband will attack me,
mm-hmm.
or will, you know, use me as a property. And then I couldn't complain because then the fault will always be blame on me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's many, many stories. Some of them are more difficult than
mm-hmm.
other ones. So that's, you know, what happens to the girls and some of the boys. They start growing up without identity, with an identity of I'm an object, I'm not worth it, I'm not worthy, don't have any value. You know, I could be this trash, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just, it really damages the self-esteem, the identity, the purpose in life, what were they created to be?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to come out of that state.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the adults, how is it that for the adults? Maybe my husband can say a little bit more about that.
For the men, personally, I need to dive a little deeper into the meaning of the culture where it's an acceptable thing. But I know that with the men, they're hurting as well. They're covered in a lot of shame by
mm-hmm.
what they do. And so whatever self-worth they have is buried underneath a blanket of shame for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when it's something that was done to them, something that their father or grandfather did, there's a counterbalance to, like, well, this is kind of what's been happening, and yet there is a spiritual oppression over it,
mm-hmm.
where they just kind of swallow that shame and try and eke out their identity in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the men are missing in the culture. You know, there's the lure of going away to work in the plantations, going to the cities. There's the lure of drugs and alcohol. And so a lot of the men are kind of lost, mm-hmm. and in the sense of not even like a spiritual lostness, but this identity, and especially from a culture that's kind of been pushed to the side. So they come from that place where nobody wants them. They may be doing things that they may feel shameful about, but that they see in their custom. There's a lot of conflicting things. So even as the nest is being raised up to protect the kids and the women who are most often the times of the victims of the abuse, we have a side hustle, as you say it, mm-hmm. to reach out to the men and say, hey, what's going on here? And that point of shame is actually a point where grace can be applied. Mm-hmm. And
well, let's talk about that a little bit. My experience has been that there is a spiritual oppression that comes with sexual abuse, just outside God's plan for the male-female relationship. If you get outside that plan, demons come in, and the only way to get rid of that is to bring Christ into that situation. Talk to me a little bit about how you're bringing Christ into this, because
yeah.
you could do all the physical work, and I've worked in the public school system, and I've seen wonderful people trying their hardest to help these girls, but far and away, it's not very effective because they don't deal with the spiritual piece.
Yeah, thank
so
you.
So talk about the spiritual piece over here.
I thank you for that, Mike, because it's really, it's a great conversation that is not happening very often. So for me personally, when how this came about, I was there in Costa Rica and I was able to share my own story. And my story has similar to what happened to what is happening to these girls, with a difference. Like I did find Christ in my life. So I do talk a lot about that Christ is my rock. So mm-hmm. when I talk to them, I tell them, I used to think that, you know, partying or using makeup or like dressing in a certain way was making me look cool or looking, you know, helping me have some sort of power over men or over culture, over my situation. And that for me translated to like building my house on sinking sand. And then if I would put my trust in, you know, a male who was going to rescue me, who was going to, you know, bring me like the fantasy of a story, then that's for me was like building my house on a sinking sand, because they're all humans, right? Mm-hmm. Until that point, I got to a point where I was really hitting bottom. I was really depressed. I was suicidal. And then somebody spoke to me about this hope and what would it be like for me to have a relationship with my father. And it took me a second to think about it, but then when I heard the gospel and I understood that God has sent his own child, his own son, to come to this earth to rescue me, to love me, and then I hear the story and I read the Bible and I see Christ walking in the earth and the amazed how he loved people that were broken, I felt that I was broken. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, he loved me, like I'm broken and he still loved me. And that relationship with Christ was so the key for me to come out of the shadow, the shame, the darkness, you know, and I start believing and having that, and I start experiencing that relationship myself. And if anything, it brought me a relationship of love, compassion, acceptance, grace, because of my own trauma, end up making a lot of mistakes of my own. And I had a lot of shame. So that kind of brought me up to the surface to start seeing the world in a different view. And the story is a long story. I won't be able to tell it here. But I do talk to the girls about that. And when I tell them my story, they come to me and they tell me, I wanna know that rock. I want to stand on that rock. And then we start that relationship of getting to know who is our Father, Creator, who is Christ in our life. Mm-hmm. And with that relationship, miracles start happening, because then we break that spiritual oppression and we bring basically light into that darkness. And we speak about it. We speak openly about it. And we have a story of a girl. Her name is Emily. She came to us when she was 16. And she shared her story with me. I shared my story with her. And she accepted Christ at that time. she had the courage and without relationship to talk to her mom about what happened to her. Now her and her mom went to talk to the grandma, and the grandma said also that happened to me. So within the in the time of like maybe, you know, 6 to a year, old woman in that household were talking to each other about what their story was. So it's just like breaking the oppression, breaking the darkness and the secret. And they all decided that they wanted to live their life without that kind of abuse. And they have a little 1.5-year-old girl. Her name is Genesis. And she's growing up without that oppression. Mm-hmm. It's just bringing light into the darkness, the secret. Let's open up that. Let's talk about it. Yeah,
you're reminding me of scripture in Revelation where it talks about they overcame by the word of their testimony and by the blood of the Lamb. And it needs both of those. And that is how, you know, when we do say how God has changed us, people can't just say, oh, it's you just Christian. You're just trying to convince me of something. You know, why don't you go sell encyclopedias instead? When it's, no, this is me. You know me. This is what happened. This is what God did for me. Let me introduce you to this person, this Almighty God, Jesus. Then life's change.
So for me, I was raised in a missionary home. My father was a Baptist minister. So I was raised in the church. And my Christian faith didn't come alive to me until I got into 12-step as I was recovering from many addictions. And, you know, that verse which says that he exchanges our filthy rags for the white robe. He exchanges my shame and my addiction and my wrongs for his glory. And it's that identity that I find in Christ that we want to impart to the Bri-Bri that are suffering under this oppression. You know, we are not like some glorious saints missionaries that are coming down there to the rescue to save the poor Indians. We're not doing that.
No.
Not at all. We're coming down with broken stories saying, this is what Jesus means to our life. This is how he's changed our life. And we're just helping them. We're just having them have the same hope that we have. And, you know, someone said recently that, you know, when we were describing the work of the nest, we're not going down there to, like, add anything. We're just going down there to replace that notch in the spirit where that oppression could be turned into something that's wonderful. So
I mean, this spirit there, mm-hmm. I mean, it's there. It's just not, it's an evil spirit. It's just like, it's so clear for us that, you know, these spirit people are very spiritual. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're worshiping sex, they're worshiping drugs, alcohol. The girls are losing their values. So we're not giving them, you know, we're just replacing one to, you know, bring the light to that. So they have the choice to replace, am I going to have a spirit of evil and continue doing this harm? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to choose a spirit of light? And I'm going to, you know, create mm-hmm. something beautiful out of this. So it doesn't matter whether we're there or not. There's a spiritual presence there. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, you know, it's their choice to decide, you know, whether they want to continue their life or not. And so far, it's been amazing how the response we have, because these children are tired of being abused. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the moms are tired of seeing, you know, people in their family abusing their children, and men are also coming out saying, I'm tired of doing this, mm-hmm. you know, and then finding that, okay, what is my hope? Well, you know, there is that hope. And once they start walking in that, believing in that, learning about that, their lives get transformed, not mm-hmm. by us. I mean, mm-hmm. we're broken people, but, you know, we do believe that Christ can bring that change into people's lives.
I think you've got the right attitude and the right angle on this. Going through college today, if you were in a typical school, they would tell you that that the West has colonized the natives and that they've destroyed their culture. They miss the whole point of what a Christian missionary is. A Christian missionary is somebody who shares God's love and doesn't ask for anything in return. And that's really what it is. The people that you're ministering to want something. you're not in there erasing their culture.
Mm-mm.
And so I really applaud you for doing that. Now, you're here for a little while fundraising. Tell me a little bit about that. As you guys know, I don't charge anything. So I would encourage you, and I'll have in our website a connection to the Nest and where you can donate, and donate a lot and donate often. But go ahead and talk to us a little bit about what are the needs down there. Obviously, you have to live there. You've kind of quit.
So I left my 30-year career as an ER nurse and gave up my big paycheck. And so we're down there on the good graces of people that believe in what we're doing. We left full-time 8 months ago, not fully supported. So, yes, we are looking for continued support, people that want to give monthly and just become partners with us. I wouldn't say we're over-communicative, but we develop friendships and lifelong friendships with folks that partner with us. We have friends and family that are helping us out. So we're looking for folks that want to partner with us monthly. And right now at the infrastructure stage, we are looking for people that want to buy a house, families, church groups, small groups that want to come together and participate and buy a house. And that cost is $5,000 for a house.
And you've got, what, three already
funded? We've
got
three funded, so mm-hmm. we've got a few more to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, we have another base where we want to invite people to come down and experience the Nest, experience Costa Rica, non-tourist style. Subprime, it's not five-star, but it's beautiful setting, and we invite folks to come down and experience it. So we welcome people to come down and join us.
And we're also opening our website soon, a volunteer application page. So we soon are going to start asking folks to start praying about it and thinking about the possibility of coming to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike will tell more about that. So we're going to be looking for volunteers to come at a 3-month basis, 6 months, a year, 2 years, or 5 years. So that's going to be coming up soon in our website. Because the kids are coming. We are going to going to fill up these houses, and we're looking for those parent figures. If you speak Spanish, that'd be great. If not, this is going to be a bilingual community. And and we also farm, and we create jobs through the Nest. So our overhead for the Nest is about $1,000 a month. So we're also seeking support so we can continue creating these jobs so people can actually help and feed their families.
Right. And so if you just Google, if you don't bother looking at our website, just Google The Nest Costa Rica and you'll get right there. So I'm going to let you guys go.
Yep.
And it's good talking to you. And I will keep you all informed over the months, and we will see what we'll see. Bye-bye.
Bye.